morning and welcome to episode 61 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is one of the longest running Magic writers out there who is most well known for Abe's Deck of Happiness and Joy. I am dying to know what this is, and I'm sure that you are too. Hello, Abe Sargent.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Awesome. I get to see you. You turned your webcam on for me.
True.
I love when people do that. Although it certainly helps when your background is pleasing. I always tell the story of, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there's a pro player named Roberto Gonzalez out there. And I remember he turned his webcam on for me and it looked like he was in prison. It looked like he was slouching in his chair, slouching in his bed. And the room was very small, very white, crisp sheets. And I was like, is he incarcerated? Like, where are we doing this from? And it certainly helps when your setting looks nice and I don't feel like you're calling me from Alcatraz. So
it's nice.
So one of the things I noticed upon trying to get a hold of you, Abe, is you don't seem as plugged in as the rest of us. You don't seem to have a Twitter. I didn't find you on Facebook, and I had to go directly through Stibs to find you. So what's behind all of that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, actually. One is that for so many years, I actually ran residence halls in dormitories, and I was living where I worked.
Okay.
And so because I had to kind of keep my private life private, I didn't want to get online. So many other staff would have residents that were stalking them or stuff like that. And so I just didn't want to have any confusion. So I didn't want to put myself out there online that much. So I never really got into it.
Really? And that's so interesting for me because so much of what I do, I always like to joke that I stalk my prey whenever I have guests on the show, just so I can find out more about them and maybe come up with things to talk about. And I remember I went through all the usual channels and I was like, I've got nothing. Like all I have is this articles. And your articles are very good and I certainly enjoy them, but it was the first time I really had to like read through months and months of articles to find little tidbits to talk about. And even in terms of getting a hold of you, I remember I first asked Natasha from Gathering Magic. I was like, psst, Natasha, what's his email? And she's like, I don't know. Ask Stibs. And I'm like, okay. So then I was like, Stibs, what's his email? And he goes, well, I can let him know you're interested. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, we're doing the middleman thing. All right. So I'm like, Stibs, tell Abe that I would like to have him on the show. And he's like, I'll do that. And then I got the email and I'm like, okay. So it was definitely interesting. I've never really experienced that before. Mm-hmm. So did you do any teaching yourself or were you just in the resident area?
No, I was just in the resident area. I did, when I was at Eastern, was an adjunct lecturer for about 2 years for a political science course. But that's it.
I have to say this. I don't normally spring things on my guests, but when I was stalking you, Abe, I did find an interesting little page about you. I don't know if you're aware of this. Do you know there's a site called ratemyprofessors.com?
Yes, I've looked myself up on it.
Okay, and you know you've got a very good score?
Yes, I am that arrogant that I looked myself up on ratemyprofessors.com. I'm not afraid to admit that.
That's fantastic. Because again, I like I said, I was researching you and I know that you've lived quite a life, which we'll get into throughout the show. And I remember I saw this page. There was no photo, of course, because you're a little private. And I remember reading these really good things. Overall, the theme seems to imply that you're very business. Like everybody, don't sleep in this class. That's all I've got to say. Solid, a bit hard, but entertaining. Like you've got a very good reputation here. Except for one guy who said he really sucks, no help, unclear, not a good teacher.
Yeah. You always have at least one of those people.
We'll just pretend that one doesn't exist because I seem to think you're okay. But other than that, a lot of good reviews, and I thought it'd be fun to kind of surprise you with that. So so let's get started talking about your Magic career. So you've been writing Magic articles for at least 10 years now, I believe. What is it about the game that keeps you motivated or inspired enough to write about it for this long?
Well, I think part of it is that the game is always changing. I mean, there's always new sets, new cards, new formats, new players, new metagames. And because the game is constantly changing, there's so many things to write about. And there are topics that I wish that I'd written about, more about, going back in my career and looking back. I wish I'd written more budget articles, and I wish I'd written some more articles on pre-constructed decks. Lots of people wrote about those, but I wish I could have done more on that. Mm-hmm. So there's always stuff to write about because it's always changing.
Right. So how is it that you decide on what to write about? Because it seems like right now, if I understand, you're more of a casual player. You don't seem like you're one of the competitive types. And what made you decide that you wanted to focus in on that side of things?
Well, I wasn't original.
Okay.
a casual writer, which is really interesting, because I actually started out on Star City Games as a submissions writer, and which means that you send in a piece and you were unpaid. And many of my submissions pieces were tournament pieces. And based on those pieces, the Ferret, who was the editor at the time, offered me a spot as a paid freelance writer on a weekly basis because I was a good tournament writer, and that's what I was playing at the time. And then I just started playing more casual in my personal life. And so naturally my articles changed to reflect that very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So what was going on in your personal life that steered you away from the competitive side of things?
Well, I had moved to Michigan, and I was in my first year in Michigan, I really didn't connect with a local play group. Mm-hmm. So the only playing that I was doing was tournament play. And then what happened was that I slowly, about halfway through my second year, I started to connect with a local play group. And since I only had so much time for Magic, the local multiplayer casual play became my default because I really like spending time with these people, and they were playing Magic. So if I want to spend time with them, I need to play Magic with them. And so that kind of became my default Magic preference. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was playing vintage tournaments. I was big on the vintage world. There was a major website at the time called Beyond Dominia that a lot of major vintage people like Oscar Tan and Steve Menendian were on. And I was really big into the tournament scene, but that kind of ended back then. Mm-hmm.
Do you miss it at all, or do you ever have the inkling to go back to that?
I don't miss it that much. I still play Friday Night Magics. I've played in most of the FNMs the last 2 or 3 months. So I play draft occasionally and such, but I don't really miss it that much.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know if I could ever go back. Like, it's hard. I wouldn't really describe myself as, like, competitive. Like, I can't ever really see myself on the Pro Tour or anything, but at the same time, it's like, you know, whenever there is a Platinum event or there is an Open, I do like to go, and I do like to prep a little bit for it, and I have a goal that I shoot for. So I kind of... I don't know. I've thought about it. Like, there have been times where I deal with some tilting issues, if you're not aware. And there, you know, there are times where I get very fed up and it's like, this is stupid. I don't want to do this anymore. But then I think about it and it's like, well, could I imagine myself not being competitive? Could I imagine myself not getting that urge? And no, I always manage to go back to that. So I don't think that's something I could ever give up. But but I appreciate others who can. You write for, as I believe, 2 websites right now. Just 2?
For Magic, okay. Yes. I'm a writer for a news blog on a BattleTech website, too.
Okay, so where do you get inspiration from? Because even just having one podcast, I don't know sometimes what to do. And I've done the blogging thing before. I had a priest blog when I played World of Warcraft. And, you know, even then there were times where just, you know, writing constantly was really hard. So how do you get around that?
Well, I think part of it is what's helped is that the Star City Games website is my column for there is Commander only. Mm-hmm. So I'm turning in a weekly article on Commander. So that means Mark Rosewater has actually said this several times in his articles that creativity kind of breeds. Creativity is bred from restrictions. Mm. So a column where I can only write Commander articles, I actually find easier to write than my column for Gathering Magic, where I can write about anything casual that I want at all, because that's so open ended. But what I like to do is I like to write my articles usually ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, right now I have 4 articles that I've written for Star City Games, wow, just waiting to be published. And I have 3 for Gathering Magic waiting to be published.
Okay.
So that way it kind of keeps – that way I just write ideas when they come to me. And then if I get an idea that needs to be published next week, I can just send that in for my article next week and just push the other articles back by a week or two. But that way I write when I'm fresh and when something interesting hits me, as opposed to I have to write an article next week. So what am I going to do? What am I going to meet the deadline?
Yeah. See, I tend to do better when I'm very like I have writing tendencies, and I'm one of those people where it has to hit me. Like, I like to say that creativity is like toothpaste. You can't force it out. It just has to come out.
Right.
And that's how I feel sometimes. Like, when I'm trying to make a post happen, I feel like I'm rolling up that tube of toothpaste and trying to squeeze every little drop out. And I do better when it just hits me. And the same with my podcast guests. They just have to sort of dawn on me. when I try to, like, you know, put too much thought into it, it just doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, you know, people's creative processes and things like that. What are the other differences between writing for Star City and Gathering Magic, besides the freedom and what you can write about?
Well, the websites are very different now. Mm-hmm. I mean, Star City Games used to be a very casual site. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the writers that it had for long periods of time were The Ferret, Anthony Longhi, Benny Smith, Peter John. I mean, these were people that wrote casual articles, multiplayer articles. It was the casual site, and I was lucky to be a part of that for such a long period of time. But years ago, it started moving towards more tournament articles, more competitive articles, and that's its bread and butter. And now it basically has one Commander article a day, Monday through Friday, and that's basically the only casual light in the wilderness for us casual aficionados. And those articles are really good. I think the Dear Zombie column is one of the best Commander columns that's being written right now for Commander. Sheldon's always a great read. So there's some good stuff going on. Benny's, of course, a great writer still. But Gathering Magic's much more casual. The website's very Vorthos-y. There's a lot of creative stuff going on. And there are articles that are being written for Gathering Magic that nobody else is writing anywhere. It's really interesting. And so the audience is very different too, because the audience that I'll get at a Star City Games Commander article are the competitive tournament audience that's tuning in to hear about, you know, the latest Commander tech and stuff. But the audience that I get for, you know, Gathering Magic is much more laid back. They're much more community oriented. There are still a lot of people there that don't even play Commander, that just play multiplayer with their 60 card decks. And so it's much more an informal kind of a website. And the readership reflects that. So it's very different. And I need to make sure that I'm very cognizant of the different audiences when I write my article.
Was there a part of you that was a little worried when you saw Star City kind of going in that direction, you know, that you might not have a place there anymore, that you feel like you might not be as well received? Like, you know, when you saw that shift happening, what were you thinking?
Well, I kind of loved being like the quiet voice in the wilderness. Yeah. I really like that. I really like that role. And I've been, you know, except for when I was on hiatus for about a year or so from SCG, I have been a weekly or a biweekly writer for them for more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I've written almost exclusively on casual. And so it's given me an opportunity to write things for casual that a lot of people weren't, and to do it on a major website. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some stuff that I created was, like, for example, the Magic the Role-Playing Game, which is my favorite invention that I ever came up with in a Magic column, which is where you actually take and create a Planeswalker character that you will grow over time with experience points and stuff as you play more games.
Oh, wow.
And it's a really fun concept, and I've written a few follow-ups to that and so forth. But I was able to write some stuff like that, some Commander stuff when it was still new, some other formats that people weren't writing about, and do it on one of the major banner websites for Magic. So for me, I considered it a real opportunity during those years when it was moving more and more competitive, but had more and more readers. So for me, that was, you know, my opportunity.
Yeah. You brought up a really good point with Gathering Magic, Abe, and that's one of the reasons that I enjoy this site so much, is because Gathering Magic is really doing things that no other site does. And not only that, but I feel like a lot of their writers have so much passion for what they do, like, especially in terms of my show. Like, you know, whenever I'm mentioning that I need a guest for something, the Gathering Magic folks are always so down to talk about it, and they could talk about it all day.
Yeah.
And that's not to necessarily throw shade at other websites, but, you know, I do feel like when I'm trying to contact writers for some of the other sites, you know, they feel like, well, I write about it, I don't necessarily like it enough to want to talk about it. And you feel like, you know, the passion only goes so far. But with Gathering Magic, they're all just, they live it, they breathe it, you know, if they could write more than once a week, they would. And that's why I really enjoy having so many of their writers on my show. And I've had, I think Gathering Magic probably boasts the most number of, you know, their writers I've ever had. I've had more, I haven't had as many Star City folks on. I haven't had as many, you know, TCG player folks on. And and I love that. If I could just draw from you guys, I probably would.
Yeah, I one of the things I really like about Gathering Magic is that about a few weeks ago, I started thinking just randomly that if I were to create my own website, my own Magic website, and who I would be if I were the editor of it, and what kind of vision that I would have, the ideal casual site with some creative articles that GM was doing, I would probably invite to be my writers more than half of the current GM staff to be writers on my ideal website, because I think that they do some great stuff, some avant-garde stuff in some ways, and some really interesting stuff too. I think, for example, MJ Scott has one of the best columns, week in and week out. She's doing amazing stuff, you know. And I love reading about her, you know, turning herself into Vraska or something like that. It's just so random and so amazing to see that as a magic column, yeah. because it yeah. breaks out of this fold. Because for so long, magic columns were a tournament report. Here's my tournament report. Yeah. Or what I was going to do, or it was strategy. Here's how you play this deck. Here's how you play this metagame. Or it was card evaluations. You know, these cards are the good ones. Or my deck. Here's my deck, and here's what it does. Or a finance article, and here's what the finances are. And having articles that break out of that kind of box and are doing some new things and innovative things, that's really compelling reading.
Yeah.
As somebody, and so authors like MJ Scott to me are just doing some really, really interesting things.
Yeah, she is. She's a beautiful girl, and I love her just because she is fierce. Like I remember when she did the Vraska thing, and I was like, "You better work. Like you are so good, you know." And then she did the recent thing, and I was like, "You are giving me some face right now." I was like, "I am all for this. Like keep going." And I've actually asked her to be on my show as well, and I think she's working on some sort of ebook at the moment. But I think she said she was free in November, so once she's free, I would love to have her on because I think she's very compelling. Also, as a mother who plays. And she's married to a man who plays, and they both play. They seem to play at different competitive levels, you know. And she also recently did some flavor text for Wizards, so she's a well of topics for me. So the yeah. second she becomes free, I plan on getting to know her a lot better.
Snatching her up. Yeah.
So one thing I've been able to determine from shocking you like I have, Abe, is you seem to have lived quite a few lives. You started off in West Virginia, detecting a little bit of your accent there, which is adorable. Just throwing that out there. And then you moved to Michigan. You finally ended up in Philadelphia. There was talk of you joining a seminary. Walk
yes.
me through the many lives of Abe Sargent.
Well, it's a long story, so we'll try to keep it on the shorter side.
Okay.
I grew up in West Virginia. You can probably tell that from my accent.
Which I love.
And well, thank you. But I grew up in West Virginia and played Magic there locally. I was introduced to it when I was a senior in high school. And went to West Virginia University, our state school, for my undergrad and my master's. While I was there, played a lot. Met a lot of people that were from the East Coast that were there at school that played. And so I got connected to tournaments, and I got connected to a lot of the early playing there in the 90s, the late 90s. And then I graduated, and I decided that I wanted to work in higher ed with universities. So I went to Eastern Michigan University. And in fact, the first day I was ever in Michigan, I remember this, was the day they flew me out for the interview.
Oh, wow.
So I never even set foot in the state before. And Eastern Michigan's in the southeast corner of the state in a little town called Ipsy. It's right outside of Ypsilanti, rather. It's right outside of Ann Arbor. And I was there for 6 years. And that's where, you know, I was playing some tournaments and got attached to that play group and so forth. And then I left there to go to London. And I went to get a second master's degree in philosophy because I really wanted to get a degree in philosophy, and I really wanted because it's fun. And I also really wanted to go to London for a while too. So I went there but I was only there for a short period of time, and some unexpected financial circumstances hit. And then I came back and I applied for a job at Wayne State University in Detroit. Was there for 3.5 years, and then I was there up through last May 2012, and then I left to go to Philadelphia for a degree in theology this time, which is similar to philosophy, at seminary in Northern Philadelphia. And I actually just finished my final class for that about 3.5 weeks ago.
Okay, so when you say seminary, are you joining the priesthood?
Okay. No. This is my degree's in theology. It's not in divinity.
Okay.
Divinity is the degree that you get to be a pastor,
okay.
and it includes a lot of pastoral skills, stuff like counseling and those sorts of things. And I'm just studying theology. So I'm just studying the fun part.
Okay, good. Because when I first read that at first, because I can be a little racy, and I remember first reading that, and I'm like, he was in Sem. Oh God, I'm gonna probably burn in my chair if I talk to him. Like, I didn't know to what extent you were pursuing that. So, and I didn't know if I'd have to refer to you as Pastor Abe Sargent or like.
No. Abe's mine.
Okay. And that'd be really interesting if you did go that route. You know, like pastor by day, magic writer by night, like.
That would be, and but I didn't even make my students in my classes call me Professor A. They just call me A.
Very cool.
So I'm not so ostentatious that I'll take a title I don't even have.
Of course, this has me thinking of like really awesome, you know, parodies of confession involving magic. Like, you know, tell me your sin, my child. I played Affinity this weekend, and I kind of liked it. And you're like, it's okay. So another thing you're recently known for is something called Highlander. I'd never heard of this before. I'd never seen this before, but apparently there's a style of deck called Highlander. What is Highlander?
Highlander is basically kind of like Commander.
Okay.
In that you can only play one of each card except for basic lands. And I think every format gets better with Highlander.
Really?
So I basically have almost all of my decks are Highlander decks. Commander is Highlander naturally. But I have several decks. And, of course, my piece de resistance, my best work is the Abe's Deck of Happiness and Joy, which is about 2,700 cards right now and growing, and is completely Highlander. So except for the basic lands, it's every card. There's no more than one of each card.
Okay, so what exactly about Highlander makes it better?
Well, a couple of things. It makes it more random.
Okay.
So because it's more random, it makes the games more interesting. Also, it because you only have to have one of each card, it's easier on your card collection. Because then you don't have to have four or three or whatever of each card in order to make your deck better. Plus, you know, 20 years of Magic, there's enough redundancy that you don't necessarily need to have four of each card. And it allows you to build deeper into your collection and deeper to cards that do more interesting things. It makes the game a little bit more chaotic, and I think that's a lot more fun.
Okay, so I'm just trying to imagine this.
Real big advocate of Highlander.
Okay, so I'm trying to imagine this. So the deck itself is 2,700 cards.
Okay.
Is that it? Am I right? Okay.
Yeah.
And you show up to a Commander game. How do you shuffle it? How many piles does it take up? Like, I'm trying to imagine this.
How do you shuffle, huh? Well, it's five color deck.
Okay.
So I have all the colors, and in fact, I actually have just sitting here randomly because this is the place where I work at for Magic.
Get a visual.
I have here. Yeah. I have here all the cards for Theros that I'm going to add to my deck.
That's a lot of cards.
So it's about 50 cards.
Okay.
That's just one set.
Okay.
And I actually have the deck here, but it's so big, I'm not going to bring it out. But it's basically four lines in a big, long box.
Okay. So when you play other people, are they just playing with their normal 100-card Commander decks, or do they have big fuck-off decks like that too?
No, not normally. What I'll do is, I might, for example, I'll take this box with me when I go, and it just has like 20% of the deck basically is in this box. And I'll just randomly change it up each week, and I'll take it to the card store. And then, for example, let's say I play against some people that are playing Commander, I'll just say that my Commander's Cro-Mat, since Cro-Mat's not in my deck, I can't draw them. And then I'll just play with Cro-Mat as my Commander, and it'll just be like two or three or 400 cards instead of 100 cards. Nobody minds. And if I draw a card that's banned in Commander, I'll just discard it and draw another card. We'll do it that way.
See, that's the difference between us, because I admit I haven't played a lot of Commander, but I got to be honest, if I saw you roll up with this 2,700 card deck, I get that Commander's sort of fun and all, but I'd probably scoop. I'd be like, I got nothing.
Sure.
There's no way that my little Almnath deck that Brandon Islip made me could possibly compete with Abe's deck of Happiness and Joy. Mm-hmm. Very much David versus Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that really attracted me to your post, Abe, was a post that you wrote in 2012. And this was actually a follow-up piece to one you wrote in 2004. And at the time, there were people that said it was the best piece of magic writing they'd ever written. And it was very, very personal, and it was very unlike anything anybody else had ever read before. What did it feel like to receive that much praise from people about something you wrote, especially something so personal?
It was really humbling. Mm-hmm. Because when I first wrote Revelations of a Magic Writer, and for those of you in your audience who are not familiar with it, it's an article I wrote some time ago, actually. I think it was in 2004, mm-hmm. 2005.
Yeah, 2004.
And I document basically my history as somebody who has a condition called Huntington's disease. Mm-hmm. And Huntington's disease, for those of you who may not be aware, is a genetic disease that I got from my mother. And it's very similar to Parkinson's disease. It's a neurological condition. It's not one that has any sort of a cure, and it causes physical palsies. My body will start to shake and tremor and Twitch, and it also causes some changes to my personality and to my mental facilities. And so I wrote an article about being a Magic player with that as my end game because it hadn't started yet. Mm-hmm. And it was called Revelations of a Magic Writer, and it was very well received at the time. And a lot of people, you know, said some really humbling, heartwarming things. And then it kind of had a renaissance about 4 or 5 years afterwards because Ted Knutson, as part of an interview with Mark Rosewater for Star City Games, just asked him what his favorite Magic article was. Mm. And he said his favorite Magic article was Revelations of a Magic Writer,
wow,
which was written by me. And that was something. To hear Mark Rosewater say that my article was his favorite article. And he talks about how it impacted him because he became much more personal in his articles after reading that. Of course, because this is in a major interview by a major guy, lots of people clicked on the link and read the article again. And a new wave of people really started to push it on Twitter and Facebook. And for that week or two, people like Pat Chapin and stuff are emailing me and Twittering very, very positive things about me. And so kind of had that second wave. And then after I was diagnosed with Huntington's disease that had already started, I knew that I was going to write a follow-up piece to let people know what was happening with my life because it was such an important part of many people's lives. They really got something from it. So I knew I was going to write a follow-up, and I just was waiting for the right way to write that follow-up. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I came up with the concept of On That Day Like Any Other, which is the follow-up to that, which was published, I think, a year ago. And last year on Star City Games 2, where I talk about what it's like to have been about a year now with Huntington's disease, what that's been like. It was unfortunately earlier than it was supposed to have been, so I kind of got blindsided by it. And it was not what I expected it to be. I expected a physical battle on a regular basis with my body, and it just really has not become that yet. Instead, it's really more mental, and I had not expected that, and so I was kind of surprised by that. And so I had articles about that too, and again, another third wave of people going back and reading the first article to read that one, and another wave of support from some of the same people as well as a new group of people reading those articles and really – you know, really, really finding something in it that resonated with them. And so being able to touch people with some stories in my life, I think is part of the value that I think I've added to magic writing generally. And some stuff that I like to continue to do. I like to continue to bring out some occasional personal stories to make magic about more than just the cards, because we're a community that's bound by a lot more than just, you know, 60 cards in a deck. We're a community that's tied together very strongly. And so I've tried to really push that in my articles, that concept.
Was there a part of you that worried that it was going to be too personal for you? Because this is, from mm-hmm. what I gather from reading the articles, this could get ugly.
It could, and
to share a part of yourself with that is huge. And mm-hmm. you know, was it a little too raw? Like, were you sure? You know, while you were writing, it was ever a part of you that was like just feeling really exposed, or you know, did you realize how big of a deal it was that you were sharing this at the time?
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how big of a deal it was going mm-hmm. to be. But when I first wrote it, I actually wrote it cathartically, mm-hmm. and I wasn't sure if I was ever going to publish it. And then as I read it, I realized that there was something really, really important here. And then I went ahead and published it. And this was right after another magic writer at that time for Star City Games, I believe his name is Richie Prophet, had just come out with a major medical condition, which he would die from, I think, a year later. I think they still have an annual memorial tournament for him down in Roanoke. So that was kind of an inspiration too. That he could talk about this in one of his columns, and some people could talk about it, and so I felt that it was important for me to share my story too. Now there were some people that were a little, they weren't sure how to take the article. They read it, but they were like, this is a magic website. Why are we reading an article about this? And then I also had some feedback from people who didn't fully. I think it's partly my fault for not feeling to communicate with them, but didn't fully understand where I was coming from for some of the things. For example, I mentioned in there that I just never saw myself as getting married because I wouldn't want somebody I loved to be burdened by having to take care of me for 10 years mm-hmm. because of Huntington's disease. So I'm still single to this day. I have no intention of getting married at
Which
all.
Which is a shame because you're adorable.
I appreciate you saying so. But that's just not really been a part of who I am, what my future is going to be like. I'm the last person in my family with Huntington's disease. My mother had it, her father, a few uncles had it, and so forth, wow. but none of them had children. So I'm the last person with this strain of Huntington's disease, and it will die with me. And I'm very comforted by that fact, that beast that slayed my mother will die with me.
Wow, that's such a hefty statement. Like, I can't even tell you what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow. But, you know, to have that foresight and that determination to say this stops here and to have that part of your life already mapped out, like, I can't even imagine what that takes. Like, that's wild to me. So I guess the thing I find really interesting that you said is I wish more people got personal, because I came from the World of Warcraft community, and it was very commonplace for people to, and maybe it's because we were all hiding behind computer screens, but whenever people did blog, they were itching to talk about themselves. You know, I'm not just these polygons. I'm a mother, I'm a father, I have bipolar, or I'm gay, or whatever the case might be. Yeah. And it was very common to see, you know, to find out more about who you were playing with. And one of the things I find really sound almost sad about the Magic community is I don't see that at all, and especially as a podcaster. One of the reasons I started this show was to get behind the deck, where I don't care how many pro points you have. I don't care that you've seen the world. Right. I don't care what your favorite colors are. Those are all obvious questions to me, and it's very hard when I have people who want to be on the show and people have volunteered, and I go on my stalking binge, and I can't find anything other than the deck lists, and I can't find anything other than the set reviews. And it's like, you know, there's got to be a person in there somewhere. And, you know, with you, it was very easy because you are so open about this. But, you know, that's another reason why I've had to politely turn some people down, is because I don't have enough about them as people to warrant having them on my show. And some would argue that you don't need that, but I do. And I wish more people would go there, because it doesn't feel like enough people do. Why do you think that is? Do you think that there's just not a – do you think that it's the sites that are kind of squashing that are saying, we're a magic website, keep that to yourself? Or do you think it's that people don't think it's necessary? Like, why do you think we don't see more of that?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily the sites. I remember when Star City Games had their that contest they had a few years ago to try to find their new featured writer, and they just invited people to come in and write columns. And they published some guidelines. And in their guidelines, they said this as they all went, and they had that kind of almost like one of those reality shows that they had a competitive, like they would knock out a few art writers each week until they had the last one standing. Mm-hmm. And they would regularly say, you need to put yourself in your columns. Need to put yourself in your columns in order to communicate with your audience. And I think Jamie Wakefield, who was one of the great writers of all time, I think was one of the people that really did that best in the late 90s and early 2000s. He would talk about his wife. He would talk about his personal life. And I think that really helped him to become one of the great magic writers of all time. Mm-hmm. And we all felt heartbreak when his wife passed away. And so those sorts of things I think are very important for magic writers. And I don't think the sites are necessarily pushing people away from that. What I do think is happening, though, is that the sites have kind of moved away from the previous way of getting magic writers. Previously, in order to become a magic writer during my era, you had to put out a bunch of material for free in order to become a magic writer. You had to send out submissions writers to various magic sites. You had to work yourself for weeks or months and learn before you became a magic writer. So you were at least somebody that had already written articles that were good, people liked them, you know, and you had developed, you know, your style and your voice. And a lot of writers kind of developed under that system. And there are a few people doing that today. I remember the casual writers over at News Vessel did that, like Bruce Richard and some others like that did that over there. And they did some free writing for a blog for about a year before Gathering Magic hired them to be free featured writers. But many writers today are being given a pen because they are popular in tournaments. And being a popular tournament writer does not always translate into being a good writer.
Thank you.
Because just because you can build a good tournament deck and can play it really well and you can dissect a metagame with your friends does not translate necessarily to being a good writer. Now, it can in some cases. Some of my favorite writers, like Zvi, for example, is a great tournament player and is also, in my opinion, one of the best tournament writers. So I think that you can be. But as a general rule, there are a lot of people writing, and they're just writing for that week. That, you know, for example, it's very common for a writer who's a big name right now on the Pro Tour circuit to be given a column where he's just writing about the decks he's trying out and so forth. Not great Magic writing, but people are tuning in and week out, week in and week out, because he's brilliant at Magic. So his Magic writing may not be the best in the world, but because he's such – but because he knows his format really well, people are turning in and they're getting value from that. So, you know, it's a different kind of Magic writing than the kind of Magic writing that I kind of grew up on, which is much more personal, much more informal and laid back and so forth.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you. It's sometimes it takes even less than that. Like, for example, I'll throw a little bit of shade. TCG Player has a really bad habit of anytime there's a States event, they will let whoever won the States event write for them. And it's just like, you know, why? I don't get it. And, you know, I know I submitted an article to Gathering Magic and it was turned down. I have no problem saying that. But it was turned down with feedback and here's a list of things you can work on. But, you know, for me to have that happen and then have somebody who, you know, borrowed their deck, strolled into the tournament, you know, won a States event and, oh, he gets a column. It does feel like a bit of a slap in the face where that's all it takes. Like, that's really it. And I agree with you in that I wish there was more of a, you know, like the period of having to earn that. And I can see the Pro Tour guy getting it, but random guy who plays Black Red Zombies, not so much. I agree with you that there needs to be some kind of training ground.
Yeah, I agree. And I would really like to be an editor, because I love to be able to reach out to a lot of new writers and kind of develop them. And a lot of editors just don't have time for that these days. But I'd love to be able to do that. I tried to do that with some early writers at Star City Games. Talon Lee was somebody who came in by being a grinder who grinded a lot of articles first. Evan Irwin, big name today, but he also did the same thing, and I tried to help him along. And so I tried to help out a few writers here and there, but not as much as I wish I could have over. That's one of my major regrets, is that I haven't been as open to helping out new writers as I could have been. And I should have been more proactive in that.
Do you think
I only helped out 4 or 5 writers during the course of my career? I wish I'd done that more.
Do you think you might have more opportunities to tap into that, or has that passed you by?
Oh, I don't know if that's passed me by or not.
So there's still a chance.
I can still remember trying to help out some of those submissions writers with their columns and so forth. And, you know, I helped out Taylor Lee. I gave him he stopped writing after about a year or two, but I gave him one of my weekly columns one week when I was going on vacation. So, you know, a couple things here and there. And I knew Evan from a previous website. He used to run a game called Star Chamber. It was an online CCG type game. He used to write for it, and I played for it and wrote a couple of columns for his website. And so we knew each other from there. So when he came over to Magic and started writing about Magic a lot, I just kind of naturally, you know, looked over a few of his articles, gave him some support and so forth, but not a lot. I mean, it was very, very little. And so although he was a talented writer from the very beginning, so he didn't need a lot. I wish that I had done more in retrospect.
Do you feel that the competitive people took criticism well? Because I would imagine that they'd be like, well, don't you know, I won Grand Prix this, I run Pro Tour this, who are you to tell me my sentences don't flow? Like, was that ever an issue?
No, I didn't get a lot of feedback or very many problems, because it wasn't that much.
Okay.
I didn't, you know, I did just a little, and again, I really wish that I'd done more. With all those writers and with a lot more writers too, because there were some good writers out there that I think wrote some good stuff and stopped writing, and I kind of wish that maybe if I had encouraged them more. And one of my great regrets is Johnny Liu. Johnny Liu was a multiplayer writer who wrote for Star City Games for about 2 years, on and off. And in fact, I actually liked him so much that last year I think I wrote an article on Star City Games called "Where Are You, Johnny Liu?"
Aww.
Where I go back and look at his articles and then say, here's some things that he really had to say. And, you know, I really wish that he was still writing. And sometimes a writer has some brilliance in them, but only writes for 6 months or a year, and then they start to get a little burnt out on it. And I don't know what happened to him, But if that's what happened, I kind of wish I had encouraged him more because he was one of the best multiplayer writers at the time.
Yeah.
He wrote some really good things. And so sometimes I kind of wish that I would encourage people more. I always try to send out – I'm very generous with my posts to other writers and saying, you know, this is a good article or something like that. But I also want to make sure that I'm trying to contact, you know, writers behind the scenes by email and stuff like that and trying to build those relationships. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I wanted to ask you, Abe, in terms of your illness is, do you think that if you weren't dealing with Huntington's disease that you might view the game a little differently? Like, how has it changed how you look at the game?
So if I didn't have Huntington's, would I view the game differently? I'm not sure. It's a difficult question to answer because I've known all my life that I could have Huntington's disease. And when I was in a senior in college and I was looking to see what I wanted to do with my life, I wanted to see, you know, how much time I was going to have. So I went and I took the test to see if I had Huntington's disease. And basically what I was going to do is if I didn't have Huntington's disease, my guess was I was probably going to go get a doctorate because that was going to take like 6 or 7 years and I'd have time for that. Mm-hmm. But if I did have it, I would do something else. And so when it came back that I did have it, it was going to hit me in my late 30s. I went ahead and I got a master's in public administration. Just a quick 2-year degree. It's applicable in a lot of different places. And then went back out to start working. I've always known that I could have it. And that was when I started playing Magic and so forth. And that was when I was playing competitively too at that time. But I do think that having Huntington's disease has helped me, kind of see the forest instead of the trees. Mm-hmm. In a lot of my articles, I talked a little about this before, but especially in my multiplayer articles where I talk about the value of playing with many people and so forth. I really want to stress that ultimately for me and my beliefs about Magic is that this game is about the people. Yeah. It's not about the game. It's one of those games like Dungeons and Dragons or like poker that has kind of transcended its genre and has become a tool for interaction socially. And because it's a tool for social interaction, which I really love, I think it's really important for us to understand that and use it to unite our community. And so I've regularly fought against divisive terms like dividing community into competitive or tournament player or versus casual players or players that have money versus, you know, players who don't, and those sorts of divisions. I'm not very comfortable with that because we are one community that's brought together by this great game that we play. From wherever we come from whatever, you know, playing place that we come from, or whoever we are personally. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote, I think, Ending Homophobia in Magic, which is a very popular Magic article that I wrote for Star City Games last year about some issues that I have because a lot of gay slurs and terms were flung around at tournaments, mm-hmm. and among casual players. And so I wrote an article about us being more sensitive to that. I don't think I changed a single person's mind with that article, but I do hope that I've started some conversations about making sure that the people in our community who are on the outskirts are still – we're still allies for them. And so for me, it's really important. And I don't know if I didn't have Huntington's disease that I would have been as open to trying to build bridges between the different parts of our community.
Mm-hmm. So how is your health today? Like, are you in good spirits? Everything's okay?
No, I don't think anything's changed. I just think that it's hard to say, you know, what you were going to do, like, if you didn't have a certain part of your – that's a very important part of your identity. It's hard to say, you know, who would I have been if I wasn't Abe? It's hard to kind of draw those distinctions and so forth. All I can do is say this has helped lead me to who I am today. But
I just can't get over how comfortable you are with everything where it's like, you know, even – yeah, I mean, granted, I've gone through some things in my life, like I'm transgender, and I think that certainly comes with a certain knowledge of who you are. And, you know, as much as I pride myself on knowing who I am and having have made that journey, I feel like the journey you've made is so much more than I've done. And it's like, I'm very in awe of how you look at everything. So I can't imagine what it's like to be that comfortable with everything. And It's definitely very admirable. So if people want to get a hold of you, Abe, if they've enjoyed what they've heard here, I know that you're not on too many social media networks, but how can people get a hold of you if they wanted to?
I actually used to sign off with my email at the base of my at the base of my articles. And then I only stopped doing that once people started sending me spam, as Spambot started to collect that. And I have – so I'm very comfortable with people knowing my email address. So my email is actually just EUPLATIOUS at hotmail.com. And that's pronounced Eupladius, and it's my own unique word that I created like about 15 years ago when everybody was being had this unique handle for online and for playing video games and stuff. And so everybody had this unique handle that they came up with to kind of differentiate themselves from their real world. I created that word because I want it to be my own unique identity and not to be like, you know, anxiety22 or something like that. And so that was kind of my unique string of letters that I created. And so everywhere that appears online, it's me. It's either me playing a video game or my email address or my Skype or whatever. That word is me. So it's EUPLATIOUS.
Yeah, that's pretty much me too with anything estrus. Like estrus is sort of my – estrus is a Greek term, so it's, you know, it's out there. But anytime you see it in a gaming capacity, it's usually me. So I'm kind of the same way. If you see my online name is estrus, my email is estrus, my Skype is estrus, that's pretty much me. So I can relate to that. So it has been a pleasure getting to know you, Abe. I know certain people, specifically Bruce Richard, were very excited to hear this interview with you, and you certainly delivered. So thank you very much for coming on, and thank you for bearing with me with the lateness. I really do appreciate that.
Sure. And I appreciate this because, like I said, this is the first podcast I've done in a while.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. It's a great opportunity to get a chance to meet somebody and get a chance to just talk casually about something that I love. So, anytime.
Very cool. And if anyone else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. Then you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to leave me a positive review, some stars or a thumbs up. You can follow the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Original Estrus, OriginalOestrus. Or if you have any direct feedback for me, you can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.